Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Thursday, October 29th. Manor Park reports two COVID deaths. Two more Midland County residents have died of COVID-19-related issues, according to the City of Midland. The city reported the two women were being treated at Manor Park. One was in her 80s with underlying health conditions. She passed away Tuesday. The other was in her 70s with underlying health conditions. She passed away Wednesday. The total number of deaths inside Midland County is now at 94, according to the city. Manor Park officials reported Wednesday in a press release that one was 73 and the other was 89, and that both were residences of the Younger Alzheimer's Care Center. Quote, "We are very concerned about the resurgence of COVID cases in Midland and at Manor Park. Our staff collectively is doing all we can to manage the new outbreak and keep everyone safe," said Alan Hale, executive director of Manor Park, in a press release. Quote, "Our commitment is to manage good safety protocol and conduct tests for COVID-19 as often as necessary to get ahead of this curve. We're giving it all we can," end quote. The release also states that there are currently 13 residents in the nursing home who have tested positive for the virus, and that all 13 are residing in the designated COVID-19 isolation area. The Midland Health Department reported Wednesday that there were 84 new COVID-19 cases, reflective of lab results from Sunday and Monday. The new cases bring the total number of cases this week to 399. That is more than 70 higher than the previous week. There have been 5,378 cases during the pandemic. The health department also reported 2,039 active cases, an increase of 10 compared to Tuesday, and 2,983 recoveries, an increase of 70. This is commentary from Midland Mayor Patrick Payton. Together, we can stand up to COVID-19 again. It is safe to assume all of us are frustrated with 2020 to one degree or another, whether it is the economy in shambles, COVID-19 fatigue, nasty national politics, protesters being paid to stand in front of the home of one of our own, or just the desire to trick-or-treat or go see a football game in a crowd, our patience is worn thin. Add to that, our city and region is under the fresh assault of COVID-19 for a host of factors, and once again we must step up to the plate and deal with it. I am well aware of the debates regarding what is right and what is wrong with how to deal with COVID-19. What is not up for debate is what we have already done two other times. Each time we have been staring down the barrel of a COVID-19 surge, we have taken the responsibility, beaten the virus back alongside and for one another, and started down a fresh path of opening up our city and doing life the way we know how. But today we stand right in the middle of this third round of this COVID-19 fight, and we will either rise up again or we will be told what to do from Austin. I think I know us well enough that we would rather control our own fate. So, how do we control our own fate? First, I ask each one of you that, as fatigued as I am, to do what I had to do. I had to own the fact that I had grown lazy in my mitigation efforts and practices and had to recommit to personal vigilance in wearing a mask and being more careful in public. Whether it is returning city council meetings to COVID-19 protocol or wearing a mask in places I would have otherwise decided I didn't need to, the issue was not about me, but about others. It wasn't a government mandate that caused me to reconsider my practices, but a fresh awareness that we are still in the middle of this battle, and I had to personally recommit to the fight. Second, I am asking each one of you to realize that the extremes are not going to help us beat back COVID-19 again. Ever since early March of this year, I have learned and read volumes of arguments from either side of the debate, from "this whole thing is a hoax" to "everyone is going to die because you are our mayor." I am not writing this article to debate the merits of the extremes, but I am writing to clarify what I know to be true. Our amazing Midland Health Group is under assault, not so much because of what Midlanders have not done, but because the region needed a place to go, we had done what we needed to do, and we had the space. It may not seem fair that we are having to go to battle for the region, but that's what we do best. We step up to the plate for one another and for the region. Third, I am asking you to do what freedom does best. Even though I am free to do what I want to do, my greatest freedom is in making a sacrifice for others. This selfless expression of freedom has been what we have demonstrated the last two times when called on to combat COVID-19 spikes. It has not been fun. It has been inconvenient. It has been frustrating. It has led to some heated debates. But in the end, all we have to combat this invisible enemy is the visible actions of one another for another stretch. The only way we stay open for business and try to get back to some form of normal is if we enter the ring together for round three and fight the same fight again. I have no doubt whatsoever that we could do this without mandates and dictates from City Hall or Austin. I am recommitting my efforts because I do not want to lose the ground we have taken. I hope you will join with me, even as I have had to recommit myself, and show up for round three, and let's beat this virus back again. And you know what? We may have to do it again and again until we reach the other side. But the people that have endured hardships time and time again, like the people of Midland, never shy away from fighting the good fight for one another. Wintry weather affects Midland County's polling numbers. The story was written by Caitlin Randall. The number of daily voters in Midland County fell from an average of 3,020 voters a day since early voting began down to 411 voters on Tuesday as the region was impacted by wet and frigid conditions. The decline in voters is part of a downward trend this week. Only 2,344 residents voted on Monday compared to 3,509 who voted the week before on October 19th. On Tuesday, those voting early for the November 3rd general election were limited to one location. On Wednesday, the Texas Secretary of State's office allowed for extended voting hours to 7 p.m. at all five locations. But despite the lower totals to begin the week, 36,479 residents have cast their ballots, and 2016's early voting record of 36,862 in-person voters will likely be broken after Wednesday's ballots are counted. The colder temperatures and wintry forecast also impacted voting in Ector County, where 697 people voted Tuesday, as opposed to 1,291 the day before. Less people have voted so far in Ector County than in Midland County, with numbers provided by the Texas Secretary of State's office showing 25,259 Ector County residents had opted to vote early as of Tuesday. The state has allowed extra days for early voting this election. The final days of early voting before Tuesday's election will take place Thursday and Friday from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. at locations across Midland County. Those locations are the County Annex at 2110 North A Street, Calvary Assembly of God at 908 Johnston Street, MCPL Centennial Branch, 2503 West Loop 250 North, Fairmont Park Church of Christ, 3818 North Midland Drive, and St. Paul's Methodist Church, 4501 Thomason Drive. The National Weather Service reports weather event was one for the record books. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. Some people might think this week's winter weather event was a dud, but the National Weather Service reports it was one for the record books. The National Weather Service reported Wednesday that the winter storm broke nearly every record it could have when it comes to temperature. Broken were records for record low temperature on October 26, 27 degrees, October 27, 26 degrees, and October 28, 28 degrees. The National Weather Service also reported record cold high temperatures on October 26, 42 degrees, and October 27, 31 degrees, which broke the previous record by 18 degrees. Lastly, the National Weather Service reported there was actually measurable snowfall at Midland International Airport, 0.2 inch on Tuesday. That actually broke two records, one for the earliest snowfall on record. The previous record was October 28, 1986, and the other was earliest measurable snowfall on record. Previous record was 0.6 of an inch on October 30, 1991. Another note to the colder weather is that the National Weather Service is showing that through Tuesday, the average monthly temperature in Midland has dropped around 3 degrees in a matter of 3 days. In fact, the National Weather Service showed after Saturday that October 2020 was on pace to be the fourth warmest month of October on record. However, with an average of 66.9 degrees through Tuesday, October 2020 fell well out of the top 10. A high temperature of 60 degrees is expected Thursday. High temperatures should rise into the 70s on Friday and Saturday. Greenwood ISD reports COVID closes high school for 5 days. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. Greenwood ISD Superintendent Ariel Elliott said his district's high school campus will be closed for 5 days. The superintendent said COVID-19 is forcing the education of the older students to go virtual. Quote, "The main reason is we have a lot of close contact and we want to make sure it doesn't spread," Elliott told a reporter Telegram. He said there are 100 cases of close contact, and that includes teachers. Elliott said protecting teachers is a big reason for the closing of campuses. On Sunday night, Elliott told the reporter Telegram that classes wouldn't be held because of late notifications of COVID-19 cases and that the district would use the day to deep clean our campuses and communicate with families that have had possible COVID-19 exposure over the weekend, end quote. This week, school officials also announced the high school's volleyball team would not participate in the Class 4A playoffs after players on both its varsity and junior varsity teams had to quarantine following contact tracing related to COVID-19. Elliott said the number of students and teachers is not a big list. He credited his nurses and health professionals for allowing the community to stay as safe as possible. Breaking Bread seeks sleeping bag donations for people living on the streets. The story was written by J.C. Lewis. Breaking Bread Ministries is holding a sleeping bag donation drive to help keep homeless people warm after the temperature drops, according to a Facebook post. With temperatures reaching a high of only 32 degrees on Tuesday, winter has already shown itself this year. Officials say 74 of the 150 sleeping bags the ministry wants to collect and distribute have been donated already. Sleeping bags can be bought from the Amazon wish list. 4 different sleeping bags are available to be purchased for the ministry to give to people spending nights on the street. The ministry's mission is to serve those on the streets and in the Midland community that are in need of a meal and a friend, according to their website.
Halloween happenings. City to host Halloween Fest. Cinema Under the Stars with Hocus Pocus and Rocky Horror Picture Show is Thursday at the Wagner Newell Performing Arts Center. Hocus Pocus starts at 8 p.m. Tickets are $5 and can be bought at bit.ly/cinema20hocuspocus. Rocky Horror Picture Show starts at 11 p.m. Tickets are $5 and can be purchased at bit.ly/cinema20RockyFB. Patrons may wear costumes representing characters from the movies. The city is hosting Halloween Fest at 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday at Martin Luther King Jr. Park, 2300 Butternut Lane. The 8th annual event will feature local businesses handing out treats. There won't be any games this year in order to keep a steady flow of traffic. Prizes will be given for the best decorated booth. Bloody Bill's Haunted Maze Chainsaw Carnage is 7 p.m. to midnight Friday and Saturday at 2215 West 2nd Street in Odessa. Tickets are $15 per person or $20 for line skip. The Haunted Maze will feature zombie rednecks, psycho rodeo clowns, and crazed cannibals. Live Rooftop Art Show Halloween Edition is 6 to 11 p.m. Friday at Doubletree by Hilton Midland Plaza. There will be live art, a costume contest, best horror makeup contest, food and drinks. Mama Movement Halloween Costume Party is 3 p.m. Friday at the Little Gym. The event is open and free to the public. Monster Mash Jump Bash is 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Saturday at Altitude Trampoline Park in Odessa. There will be costume contests, Halloween games, prizes, and giveaways. Tickets are $15.95 per person for 3 hours of jumping. Tickets can be purchased at https://altitudeodessa.com. First Baptist Church is hosting Family Fest at 3 p.m. Saturday. There will be carnival games, trunk or treat, prizes, and cool cars. The event is free. Petroleum Museum is presenting Grossology Family Science Night to Go. Grossology will have families experimenting with puking pumpkins, goblin snot, disappearing ghosts, ghost rockets, bubbling witch's brew, wizard potion, bone bridges, eyeball catapults, and more. A Grossology box is free. Families can register for one at www.pbpetro.org/family-science-night. Facebook Live experiments will begin at 2:15 p.m. Saturday on the Petroleum Museum's Facebook page. Thriving United's Angel Haven Halloween Party is 4 p.m. Friday at 501 North Lorraine Street. The event, which features a carnival and costume contest, is a fundraiser for the nonprofit. West Tech Urgent Care at 210 West Longview is hosting Trunk or Treat, 3 to 5 p.m. Saturday in the West parking lot. Midland Bible Church's Country Fair is 5:30 to 8 p.m. Saturday at 5900 Whitman Drive. The third annual event will feature food and game booths, inflatables, and candy. Register at MidlandBibleChurchCenter.com/registrations/events/303-453. Seven Cities Church Trunk or Treat is 5 to 7 p.m. Saturday at 5110 West Illinois Avenue. The event will be presented by the Reapers Car and Truck Club, Truck and Dolls, and Alterado Performance Team. Permian Basin CPR, 1601 West Texas Avenue, is hosting a Halloween party and open house, 2 to 6 p.m. Saturday. The event will feature games and treats for kids with coupons and prizes for teens and adults. Bernie's Italian Ice will provide free treats to the first 100 guests. Solid Rock Fellowship Out West is hosting Harvest Festival, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Saturday. There will be food, games, music, and a bounce house. Monster Mash starts 11 a.m. Saturday at Woody's Hideaway. There will be drink specials, including $5 Jeeper Creeper and $6 Deadhead Cocktails. Booze and Booze Halloween Party starts 11 a.m. Saturday at Little Woodrow's. Attendees can show their best costumes featuring a face mask, and winners will be announced at midnight to receive a prize. Costume contest starts at 11 p.m. with spooky drink specials all night.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, October 29, 2020. Walking it through. From left, mole. played by Nicole Dimbleiker, Toad, played by Abby Cheek, Badger, played by Gabriel Almager, and Rat, played by Richard Werner, performed Tuesday during dress rehearsal for Midland Community Theater's Pickwick Players, The Wind in the Willows. The production opens Friday. Early voting ends Friday. Early voting centers for the November 3 general election continues through Friday at 5 voting centers across Midland. County Annex, 2110 North A Street, Wednesday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Calvary Assembly of God, 908 Johnston Street, MCPL Centennial Branch, 2503 West Loop, 250 North, Fairmont Park, Church of Christ, 3818 North Midland Drive, St. Paul's Methodist Church, 4501 Thomason Drive, Wednesday, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., Thursday and Friday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Early voting totals. Wednesday, blank. Tuesday, 411. Monday, 2,344. Sunday, 917. Saturday, 2,516. Friday, 3,374. Thursday, 2,865. Wednesday, 3,160. October 20, 3,612. October 19, 3,509. October 16, 3,780. October 15, 3,399. October 14, 3,330. October 13, 3,259. Past early voting totals, 2016, 36,862. 2012, 29,824. 2008, 30,445. Source, Midland County Elections Office. Watering schedule. The City of Midland has adjusted the lawn and landscaping watering schedule, which will allow residents to water 4 days a week instead of two. Even-numbered addresses can water on Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and odd-numbered addresses can water on Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. How sick are you? Midland Memorial Hospital offers a nurse triage program, 68 Nurse. The program is designed to help people determine whether their health situation warrants a trip to the emergency room. Midland residents can call the line by dialing 686-8773. The program is free and available 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Local nurses are available to help you determine the best place to receive care for your situation. 68 Nurse can help you save time and money by directing you to the most appropriate health care option, whether it's a neighborhood clinic, urgent care center, emergency room, or just staying home. Know a member of the military coming home? Military families can call 352-0785 or email Vicki Gomez, ZEMOGV, at cable1.net. When they know their member of the military is flying into Midland International Airport, so the Permian Basin Welcome Home Committee can be there to greet them. Honor those who served. There are many organizations in operation right here in the Permian Basin that are at the task of serving all kinds of needs for present and former members of our military. Some of them are Show of Support, 687-2167, Honor Our Troops, 889-0177, Real Thanks, 528-6633, Centers for Children and Families, 570-1084, Midland College Veterans Affairs Office, 685-4511, Permian Basin Welcome Home Committee, 366-3458, Soldiers of Today and Yesterday, 631-3429. Today in History. Today is Thursday, October 29, the 303rd day of 2020. There are 63 days left in the year. Today's highlight in history. On October 29, 1929, Black Tuesday descended upon the New York Stock Exchange. Prices collapsed amid panic selling, and thousands of investors were wiped out as America's Great Depression began. On this date, in 1956, during the Suez Canal crisis, Israel invaded Egypt's Sinai Peninsula. In 1960, a chartered plane carrying the California Polytechnic State University football team crashed on takeoff from Toledo, Ohio, killing 22 of the 48 people on board. Source, Associated Press.
Opinion, Our View by Stuart Doreen. Henry's donation to make impact on idea and education. The education reform movement in Midland received a push this week from Jim and Paula Henry. Through Henry Resources, they announced a gift of 24.63 acres of land, valued at approximately $5 million, for IDEA Public Schools. It is the latest in Henry-initiated contributions that show what philanthropy can do in our community. The Henrys already donated around 30 acres of land for the Bush Tennis Center and another 3 for Chris Davidson Park. Both donations were through the Henry Foundation. The donation to IDEA Public Schools will be on land contiguous to the Tennis Center and add to the Henry's impact on Northwest Midland. The donation also provides IDEA Public School its second announced location inside Midland. IDEA currently operates IDEA Travis Academy as an in-district charter school, the result of a partnership with MISD. The Henry support isn't the first from Midland's philanthropy community. Last year, local foundation and private support for IDEA included tens of millions from Scarborough Foundation, Abel Hanger Foundation, Permian Strategic Partnership, and Henry Foundation. The donation announced this week increases the Henry support to around $7 million. Should IDEA build northwest of the intersection at Briarwood Avenue and Holiday Hill Road, it would be its own facility, property of the company that has 6 of the top 33 performing campuses across the state, according to U.S. News and World Report. IDEA Public Schools is a network of tuition-free, college preparatory public charter schools founded in the Rio Grande Valley in 2000. According to a press release, the network serves more than 66,000 college-bound students in 120 schools across Texas and Louisiana. For 14 consecutive years, 100% of IDEA Public Schools graduates have been accepted to four-year colleges and universities. IDEA alumni, many of whom are the first in their family to attend college, graduate college at 5 times the national average. We are extremely grateful for the generous donation from Jim and Paula Henry, and we look forward to providing another excellent school choice for families in Midland, said Bethany Solis, executive director of IDEA's Permian Basin region. IDEA Permian Basin believes every child can and will succeed if given the opportunity, and we will provide an additional education option to close the opportunity gap and increase levels of achievement for students and families in Midland. Interestingly, IDEA Travis Academy Executive Principal Haley McCarthy spoke to the board during the public comment period at the most recent MISD board meeting. She said the story of Travis is changing from chronically failing to one where the students are the hardest working and the parents are stepping up to help. Children believe in themselves if the adults around them believe in them. We, as the adults in this community, need to change the way that we speak, McCarthy wrote. We need to talk about children in any part of the town that we would talk about our own children, that they can and they will achieve. The success of the children in Midland is the responsibility of the adults in Midland. When we get it right, they will thrive. I think the Henrys get this. Jim Henry said as much in a statement this week. Ensuring that every student receives a high-quality education and families have great schools in their community is critical. Paula Henry added, "Advancing opportunities and access to education is one of the most important investments we can make in our future. The Henry family is happy to be able to help ensure that kids in the Midland community have access to an excellent education that will provide a solid foundation for their success in life." The Henrys have put their money and resources behind real education reform in Midland. Thank you to both for your generosity and for leading by example. Obituaries and death notices for the MRT for Thursday. George Darwin Doc Rowell, 77, of Midland, passed away on Monday, October 26th. The family will host a visitation from 6 to 8 p.m. on Thursday, October 29th, at Nally Picklin Welch in Big Spring, Texas. Services will be 10 a.m. Saturday, October 31st, at Nally Picklin Welch Rosewood Chapel in Big Spring. Interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park in Midland. Doc Rowell was born on August 23, 1943, in Kermit, to Otha and Medrith Rowell. Doc Rowell is survived by his beloved wife, Mary, sons Wes and Matt, and daughter-in-law Tammy of Midland, his sister Twilla Bundick, and sisters-in-law Peggy Ashby and Sandra Davidson of Odessa, his four beloved grandchildren, two great-grandchildren, and a host of nieces, nephews, and their children. Doc is preceded in death by his parents, his mother and father-in-law, Mildred and Robert Armstrong of Eastland, and brothers-in-law Eddie Bundick, C.L. Ashby, and Jimmy Davidson of Odessa. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. J.D. Tuck, age 92, passed away on October 20th in Midland. He was born March 3, 1928, in Baylor County, Texas, to Joseph Thomas and Eva Lou Roberson Tuck. J.D. Tuck is survived by his wife of 72 years, Frances Tuck, three sons, Byron, Mark, and Kelly, five grandchildren and six great-grandchildren, also one sister, Dora Edna Tuck Covington, and two sisters-in-law, Marie Tuck and Grace Harrison. Maria Estella Lopez, age 71, of Midland, passed away on October 24th. She is survived by her daughter, Jessica Lopez. Memorial service will be held at a later date. Services are entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home and Chapel. Michael Morse, 79, of Midland, passed away October 26th. Service is Saturday, October 31st at 3 p.m. at Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Odessa American for Thursday, October 29th. Council approves purchase of holiday decorations. Residents question spending, by Federico Martinez. The Odessa City Council unanimously voted on Tuesday to purchase $135,000 worth of downtown holiday decorations. But some Odessa residents are calling the expenditure a waste of taxpayer dollars. A portion of the $135,000 will be used to purchase two spherical trees, which will be placed at the entrance of the convention center, as well as one new display for Starbright Village, Steve Patton, the city's director of Parks and Recreation, said. Why are we spending that much money on Christmas decorations when people are losing their jobs and businesses? Resident Jeff Russell asked during Tuesday's council meeting. Why are taxpayer dollars being used to purchase two Christmas trees at the Marriott? Property the city leases to the hotel and receives nothing in return. It seems taxpayer money could be used for better purposes. Patton said the project is being paid for with hotel occupancy tax dollars, which is collected from people who stay at and use local hotels, including the Marriott. The hotel tax revenues are restricted dollars that can only be used to promote tourism efforts. We can't use the money to fix potholes or other government services, Patton said. I understand the city has many needs, but these funds can't be used for them. There's nothing wrong with spending money to make the city look nicer and more pleasant during the holidays. We need things like this to make people feel better about their community. This is an investment. These trees and decorations will be used for many years to come. Each tree costs $38,694 and $2,600 for freight, according to city financial records. The trees stand about 32 feet and will be lighted with white LED mini lights. The remaining funds will be used to purchase lights and decorations for the drive-through tunnel at Starbright Village and throughout the downtown area, Patton added. Starbright Village attracts about 200,000 visitors per year and draws visitors from neighboring communities, Patton said. The council in June approved the purchase of the trees and new decorations. City administrators noted. At that time, council approved the allocation of $40,000 as a down payment. The additional $135,000 approved on Tuesday was for the total balance due. City Manager Michael Marrero said Russell is correct. The two Christmas trees will be placed at the convention center, which is part of the Marriott. Marrero said the property is owned by the city and is in a highly visible location, which is why the trees are being placed there. A virtual lighting ceremony for Starbright Village is scheduled for 6:30 p.m., December 3rd, and the display will remain up until January 4th, Patton said. The council on Tuesday also unanimously approved $1 million in funding that will provide residents with free COVID-19 testing and flu vaccinations beginning November 1st through December 30th. The effort is being paid for with federal dollars as part of the Coronavirus Aid, Relief and Economic Security Act, CARES Act funds, Marrero explained during Tuesday's council meeting. Currently, we are seeing an increase in the number of people seeking tests, Marrero said. Last week, we saw a 37% positivity rate in those tested. We think this is a very valuable resource for our residents. The allocation is part of a partnership between the City of Odessa, Medical Health Systems, and Odessa Regional Medical Center, Marrero said. The $1 million will cover the normal costs for the COVID test, which is $150, and $50 for a flu vaccination. Russell Tippin, president and CEO of Medical Center Hospital, said MCH will offer the shots and testing at the 42nd Street Clinic and the West County Clinic. Odessa Regional will provide the services at the community clinic at their West Campus. This is a great opportunity for collaboration, said Dr. Rohith Saravanan, Odessa Regional Medical Center Chief Medical Officer. Criminal DA plan still hangs fire. Gallivan returning to commissioners November 10th with alternate proposal by Bob Campbell. In a session delayed for 24 hours as a winter ice storm abated, Ector County Commissioners Wednesday morning granted County Attorney Dusty Gallivan's request to table his plan to combine the district attorney's and county attorney's offices into a criminal DA's office. Gallivan said afterward that he would be back November 10th with an alternative for the court to consider applying an existing state law that allows DAs to try misdemeanors without formally establishing a criminal DA. Owing to the statewide political uncertainty surrounding Republicans and Democrats' competition for control of the House of Representatives in Austin, Gallivan said all options should be considered to do what's best for the county because you never know what will happen in a legislative session. He said Ector County might employ an agreement like that used by the Midland County District Attorneys and County Attorney's Offices under which the DA handles misdemeanors. Republican State Representative Brooks Landgraf of Odessa had said before the meeting that he stood ready to carry a CDA bill to Austin if asked by the commissioners. I'm waiting to see what the court's official position is and how the resolution is worded, Landgraf said. If there are options for streamlining operations and making things more efficient, we're always looking for ways to do that. There is so much uncertainty with the upcoming session that my crystal ball is pretty foggy right now. Reporting that a limitation on how many bills can be filed might be enacted when the state's 87th legislature convenes January 12th, the legislature said. It will be a challenging session if there is a Democrat majority for the first time since 2002 and we have leadership changes. With that and the pandemic, it'll make the odds of passing anything more difficult than it would be otherwise. However, Landgraf said a proposal like authorizing a CDA's office is usually considered a local interest bill that is no trouble to pass and have the governor sign. I don't expect that it would be controversial, but we may be limiting the number of bills, he said. It depends on who the new Speaker of the House is. Speaker Dennis Bonin, Republican Angleton, is leaving office, and the Democrats need to gain 9 of the House's 150 seats to claim the majority. Midland Representative Tom Craddock became the first Republican Speaker in over 130 years in 2003 and he held the powerful post for 3 2-year terms. Gallivan said Monday that a big jump in felony and misdemeanor cases had prompted his request. Having the felonies in one office and the misdemeanors in another is inefficient, he said. Most defendants don't commit just a felony or just a misdemeanor. They usually have a combination of them. Having served as county attorney since 2014, Gallivan is running unopposed in Tuesday's election to succeed D.A. Bobby Bland, who didn't seek re-election. In other business, the court accepted $80,000 for the sheriff's office from the 7th Annual Bustin for Badges Clay Pigeon Shoot fundraiser. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 6,373. Ector County negative, 25,594 out of 32,327 tested, with 360 pending. 119 deaths. Recovered, 5,209. Active, 1,045. ECISD daily cases, 7 students, 10 staff. Midland County, 5,294 confirmed, 92 deaths. Texas, 879,994 confirmed, with 7,933,477 tested. Total Texas deaths, 17,700. U.S. cases, 8,752,794 total confirmed, and 225,985 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us. Quick hits. Have you voted? Early voting continues through Friday. The Ector County Courthouse Annex, 1010 East 8th Street, Room 104. Early voting hours are scheduled from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. through Friday. 4 other voting locations will also take place from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. through Friday at Kellis Turner Community Building, 2230 Sycamore Drive, Westlake Hardware Store, 4652 East University Boulevard, the Globe Theater at Odessa College, 2308 Shakespeare Road, and Salinas Community Building, 600 West Clement Street. So far in Ector County, 29,960 have voted. For sample ballots or more information, call 498-4030 or visit www.co.ector.tx.us/page/ector.elections. Police seeking woman involved in robbery. The Odessa Police Department is reportedly looking for a woman involved in a robbery at a dollar store. The reported robbery happened at 9:38 a.m. October 12th at the Dollar General, located at 120 West Clement Street. Investigation reportedly showed a woman took merchandise and exited the store without making any attempt to pay. When an employee confronted the woman about the unpaid merchandise, the woman threatened the employee with a knife and left the scene. Anyone with information is asked to contact Detective S. Chavez at 432-335-4926 or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS and reference case number 20-0018165. Candidates report donations. Election Day is Tuesday. By Federico Martinez. Mayoral candidate Dewey Bryant continues to rake in campaign contributions, adding another $8,436 to his nearly $33,000 war chest from October 1st through the 23rd, the most recent campaign finance reports that were due Monday showed. Several candidates did not submit the required finance reports, including current Mayor David Turner. Turner, who is running for an at-large council seat earlier this month, reported that he had raised a total of $2,500 in September, of which $1,715.76 had been spent on lawn signs. Turner, who was reached by phone late Tuesday afternoon, said he did submit a finance report. However, he said he did not have any new contributions or expenditures for October. Turner has served 2 4-year terms as mayor, and due to term limits is not eligible to seek a third term for that position. Turner said he is making a bid for the at-large seat because he wants to remain on council. Other candidates who did not submit finance reports on Monday include Joanne Davenport Littleton, who is also vying for the at-large position, and Michael Shelton Sr. and Eddie Mitchell, who are competing for the District 1 seat. District 2 candidate Rachel Miner also did not submit a report. Bryant, a 2-term District 2 city councilman, is facing a challenge for mayor from Javier Hovan and Gloria Apolinario. Apolinario, who previously reported having raised $2,250, received an influx of $5,875 in contributions from October 1st through the 23rd. She spent $5,490.83 on postcards, postage, food for events, and T-shirts. Hovan reported an additional $1,005 in contributions during the same October period. He previously had raised $14,500. According to finance records, Hovan most recently spent $7,431.92 on political signs and campaign literature mailed to voters' homes. Denise Swanner, who is competing for the at-large council seat, continues to outpace her challengers in fundraising. Swanner reported raising $3,000 between October 1st and the 23rd. According to finance records, she still had another $6,826.98 left in her coffers from September. She spent $6,113.01 on postcards, postage, and T-shirts in October. Swanner previously reported raising $19,580, including $5,384 in personal funds. Latasha Gentry, who acknowledged Monday that her bid for the at-large position has been stymied by a lack of money, received a $5,000 contribution on October 23rd from Communication Workers of America Political Action Committee based in Washington, D.C. She previously reported contributions totaling $807.39. Over the past weekend, I used the money to purchase political signs, banners, and magnets, Gentry said. I know my bid is a long shot. In addition to Mitchell and Shelton, Mark Mata and Tiki Davis are vying for the District 1 seat. Mata reported $925 in campaign contributions during October, with $663.98 spent on door hangers, donuts and food and beverages for campaign events, and Facebook ads. Davis, who had previously reported spending $6,155.49 of his own money on his campaign, received a $300 contribution in October, according to his finance reports. He has not yet spent those funds. Steve Thompson, who is competing against Miner in District 2, reported $1,100 in contributions in October. During the same month, he spent $3,699.11 on signs and political mailings. Local News Roundup. Horsehead Crossing Celebration. The Pecos County Historical Commission has scheduled a 2-day celebration, October 30th through 31st, at Horsehead Crossing on the Pecos River near Girvan, or Imperial, on Farm to Market 11. Horsehead Crossing is best known as the place where the Goodnight Loving Cattle Trail hit the Pecos River, made famous in Lonesome Dove. Gates open at 4 p.m. to the public October 30th and at 7 a.m. for breakfast October 31st. The celebration will include dinner with the Chuckwagons and a campfire story with Jefferson Stillman and Christian Flanders, Fort Lancaster, on October 30th. On October 31st, a cannon artillery and reenactors will be presented throughout the day, as well as welcome with Honorable Joe Schuster, Pecos County Judge, a memorial ceremony honoring Pecos County Historical Commission members, John Mack Carpenter, Fort Stockton, Kelly Templeton, Fort Stockton, and Evans Turpin, Ira Ann. Presentations by local historians Tom Ashmore, Bill Boyd, Ernest Woodward. A visit at the old Girvan Schoolhouse, including art displays of local and surrounding artists. Bring your own chairs and water will be available. RV parking available, no water or electrical hookups are at the site. Local and area hotels are available, and RV parks are available in Fort Stockton. Fall Festival. Crossroads and the Headley Boys and Girls Club has scheduled a fall festival from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Friday at Headley B&GC, 1476 North Knox Avenue. The family-friendly event will include lots of candy, games, and prizes. Visit crchurch.cc/events/night-of-light. Haunted Maze. BloodyBill.com, home of DEFCON 1 and Circus of the Dead, 2215 West 2nd Street, has scheduled Bloody Bill's Chainsaw Carnage Haunt from 7 p.m. to midnight, Friday and Saturday. This year, in the midst of the pandemic, will include an outdoor haunted maze on site. It'll be filled with zombie rednecks, psycho rodeo clowns, and crazed cannibals. Prices are $15 per person, or new this year limited VIP, line skip ticket for $20. Drive-Through Halloween. The Ector County Library and Friends have scheduled a drive-through Halloween from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. Friday. Stay in your car and enter the line at 4th Street and Lee Avenue. Drive through to 4th and Sam Houston Avenue and stop at the stop sign. Bags of treats will be handed out, one per costumed person in the car. Visit ector.lib.tx.us. Masquerade. The Masquerade, a Halloween extravaganza, has been scheduled for the LGBTQN community and allies from 8 p.m. to midnight Friday at the Cooper Rose Building. For tickets or more information, visit www.pridecenterwt.org, event-details/Halloween. Jack's Halloween. The Humane Society has scheduled Jack's Halloween during the Odessa Jackalopes Games at 7:15 p.m. Friday and 3:15 p.m. Saturday at Ector County Coliseum, 4201 North Andrews Highway. There will be a pet costume and a children's costume contest. Prizes will be awarded. Pets from the shelter will be in costume. Bring your pets in costume. $5 entry. Benefits HSO. Pumpkin Patch Fundraiser. The Bridge, 3901 East Yukon Road, has scheduled a pumpkin patch fundraiser from 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. throughout October. Proceeds will go to support the Bridge Kids Ministry as well as the West Texas Food Bank. Call 363-0900 or visit www.facebook.com/TheBridgeOdessa or TheBridgeOdessa.org. Obituary and Death Notices from the Odessa American for Thursday. Moselle Thomas, 88, of Odessa, passed away on October 22nd in Odessa at Medical Center Hospital. Moselle was born in Sulphur Springs, Texas, to Virgie and Lewis Stokes on September 17th, 1932. Graveside service will be held Thursday, October 29th at 1 p.m. at Ector County Cemetery, Rose Hill Section. Moselle is preceded in death by both of her parents, her husband William Travis Thomas Sr., her sons William Travis, W.T. Thomas, and Robert Thomas, her sisters Dorothy Lincoln and Ella Stokes, her brothers Robert Moore and Willie H. Stokes. Moselle is survived by her son Bobby Thomas and wife Latosha, one sister Virginia Robertson, two daughters-in-law Darlene Thomas and Ada Thomas, three sisters-in-law, her grandchildren, 12 great-grandchildren, great-great-grandchildren, nieces, nephews, and a host of friends. Catalina Rivera Irvis Antillon, 88, died Wednesday, October 28th in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Hilda Dom, 74, died Saturday, October 24th in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Rogelio Rodriguez Garcia, 64, of Odessa, died Friday, October 23rd in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. October 29th at St. Anthony's Catholic Church. Father Tony is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Anita P. Montez, 91, died Tuesday, October 27th in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.